This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. There's been a renewal of deadly violence in Afghanistan's capital of Kabul. About a dozen people were killed during a midday attack on the Communications Ministry building today, ending a period of relative calm in the city. The Interior Ministry said the nearly five-hour assault had ended with all the suicide bombers dead. It began when a bomber blew himself up at the entrance to the building, enabling other attackers to enter the heavily guarded government complex in central Kabul. Police evacuated about 2,800 employees and sealed off the area around the building as at least three attackers battled Afghan security forces. Pakistan charges that militants operating out of what it calls terrorist camps in Iran are behind this week's brutal slayings of 14 security personnel in a remote southwestern Pakistani region. Islamabad says it has shared credible evidence with Tehran so action can be taken against the perpetrators. Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan is expected to talk about this with Iranian leaders during his first official visit to Iran, which begins on Sunday. Police in Northern Ireland are questioning a pair of teenagers in the shooting death of investigative journalist Lyra McKee during rioting in Londonderry on Thursday. AP correspondent Zaria Shackley has a report.
The men aged 18 and 19 were detained under anti-terrorism legislation and taken to Belfast for questioning, the police service of Northern Ireland said. The men haven't been identified or charged. Lyra McKee, 29 years old, a rising star of investigative journalism, was shot and killed, probably by a stray bullet aimed at police, during rioting Thursday night. Police said the new IRA descendant group was most likely responsible and called it a terrorist act. Sarah Shackley, London.
For more news, you can go to voanews.com online or use the convenient VOA News mobile app. This is VOA News. Here in Washington, with the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee having issued a subpoena for special counsel Robert Mueller's full unredacted report, differences among Democrats over what to do next are becoming more stark. AP correspondent Ben Thomas has a report.
While the Intelligence and Judiciary Committees continue their investigations, Democrats in the House are still focused on our work to deliver for the people.
In the Democrats' weekly address, Congresswoman Debbie Dingell immediately turned the focus to her party's legislative agenda, issues such as health care and rebuilding the nation's infrastructure. But at a campaign appearance Saturday in Keene, New Hampshire, Senator Elizabeth Warren made her sentiments plain.
I have called on the House to initiate impeachment proceedings.
Warren says she understands many Democrats feel impeachment talk just hands President Trump an issue to rile up his base, but she says a vital principle is at stake.
Is there going to be some accountability here?
Ben Thomas, Washington.
President Trump is lashing out at current and former aides who cooperated with Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation and who helped paint the deeply unflattering picture of Mr. Trump and the White House. In a series of angry tweets from Palm Beach, Florida, Mr. Trump laced into those who, under oath, had shared with Mueller their accounts of how the president tried several times to end or influence the investigation, and who portrayed the White House as infected by a culture of lies, deceit, and deception. The Trump attacks were a dramatic departure from the upbeat public face the White House had initially put on the Mueller report, when the president celebrated the findings as full exoneration, and his senior counselor, Kellyanne Conway, called it the best day for Trump's team since his election. The United Nations Children's Fund says hundreds of thousands of children affected by Cyclone Idai in southern Africa need urgent help. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN Children's Fund reports the situation for hundreds of thousands of children caught up in this monumental storm is particularly dire. It says many do not have adequate shelter and are in urgent need of food and safe drinking water. UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouillerac says children are particularly susceptible to infectious diseases.
Without safe and effective water sanitation and hygiene services, children are at high risk of preventable disease, including diarrhea, typhoid, and cholera, and also increasingly vulnerable to malnutrition.
That report was filed by Lisa Schlein for VOA from Geneva. The World Health Organization says a doctor fighting an Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo has been killed in an attack on an Eastern Congo hospital. Richard Muskoko from Cameroon died when local militia gunmen attacked the hospital in the city of Butembo, one of the epicenters of the outbreak. The violence is the latest in a series of assaults on Ebola treatment centers in the DRC. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga, sitting in for Peter Clotier.
WFP is supporting Twi Cholera Treatment Center in Beira with food assistance. We are working very closely with our colleague of WFP and other humanitarian colleagues to ensure that the food is provided in those centers.
The UN World Health Program plans to increase its emergency food and nutrition operation in Mozambique, in the provinces hardest hit by the recent cyclone Idai.
Our hope is that the elections are transparent, inclusive and credible, and they're run according to the code of conduct for the election and the laws for the election.
The European Union launches an observation mission for Malawi's May 25th election, but some political analysts question the impact of foreign election observers.
The Northwest and the Southwest region are really suffering, and we are here to cry like mothers from the Northwest so that the government should hear our cry and stop this crisis.
And hundreds of Cameroonian women call on government to stop the killing in the country's Anglophone separatist western regions. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. The UN World Food Programme says it plans to scale up its emergency food and nutrition operation in Mozambique to reach 1.7 million people in four provinces hardest hit by the recent cyclone Idai. Lisha Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The World Food Programme says it has distributed food to 1 million people in Mozambique since Cyclone Idai devastated the country more than 1 month ago. Agency officials say people affected by the cyclone and ensuing flood are receiving up to 30-day rations of rice and maize meal, pulses, and other staples. WFP spokesman Hervé Verhoosel says nutritionists have been deployed to the four priority provinces. He says they have begun treating children and women suffering from moderate acute malnutrition. Verhoosel says the plan is to treat at least 100,000 people with that condition over the next 6 months. The WFP spokesman tells VOA a cholera outbreak also has had an impact on people's nutritional condition.
As you know, an ongoing cholera outbreak that has so far infected, I believe, more than 5,000 people threatens to worse malnutrition. WFP is supporting Twi Cholera Treatment Center in Beira with food assistance. We are working very closely with our colleague of WFP and other humanitarian colleagues to ensure that the food is provided in those centers.
Verhoosel says planting for the country's second harvest in October and November must be completed in the coming days. In preparation for that, he says the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization has begun distributing maize, bean, and vegetable seeds, as well as small tools to thousands of smallholder farming families. He says the WFP scale-up operation is underway, but requires $130 million to keep it fully running through the end of June. He says a good portion of the money is needed right away as the agency plans to move to a cash-based transfer system this month. Instead of distributing food, he explains the WFP will provide cash to some 145,000 beneficiaries to buy the products they need at local markets. The storm killed nearly 1,000 people in Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Malawi, and many others are still missing. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Meanwhile, the UN Children's Fund says at least 1.6 million children in Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe need help right away to recover from the effects of Cyclone Idai, which battered their countries more than 1 month ago. Again, Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Cyclone Idai, the deadliest storm to hit southern Africa in more than two decades, killed at least 1,000 people and destroyed crops, livelihoods, and hundreds of thousands of homes. The UN Children's Fund says the emergency phase of its response in Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe is winding down. But the road to recovery will remain very long, especially for children who are the most vulnerable. It says children lack essential services, including health care, nutrition, water and sanitation, protection, and education. It says the situation is particularly dire for some 1 million children in Mozambique, where the storm hit with particular ferocity. UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouillirac says conditions in that country are ripe for an explosion of disease, noting more than 5,000 cases of cholera already have been reported.
We also have a concern of malaria with more than 7,500 cases confirmed, and UNICEF is distributing 500,000 mosquito nets. I also understand that in the coming weeks, campaigns are planned around the measles vaccination, deworming, and vitamin A boosters.
Bouillirac says UNICEF also is supporting the establishment of several health clinics in resettlement areas. The agency reports nearly 500,000 children in Malawi need humanitarian assistance to recover from the impact of Cyclone Idai. It says many children are living in crowded evacuation centers. It adds it is providing water trucks, toilets, medicine, and mobile clinics in these centers, creating child-friendly spaces, and distributing education and recreation kits to the children. In Zimbabwe, 130,000 children are at risk. UNICEF says it is furnishing vital health and nutrition supplies, other essential relief, and psychosocial support to vulnerable children in child-friendly spaces. UNICEF is appealing for $122 million to support its humanitarian operations in the three storm-affected countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Egyptians are voting Saturday on constitutional amendments which allow Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi to stay in office until 2030. The voting comes less than a week after Parliament approved the changes. Expatriate Egyptians began voting Friday. If passed, the amendment also would deepen presidential powers and military presence within communities. The presidential term would be increased from 4 to 6 years, and Sisi would be allowed to run for a third term in 2024. Supporters of the referendum have hailed the vote as a national duty, but critics charge that the vote is simply a power grab in a country where political diversity has dissolved almost completely. The multinational joint task force of the Lake Chad Basin Commission, made up of forces from Cameroon, Nigeria, Chad, and Niger, has deployed troops after suspected Boko Haram terrorists attacked Cameroon, killing at least 13 people and leaving hundreds homeless. Cameroon has been asking its people to collaborate with their military, stating that more attacks will be reported during Ramadan, expected in a few weeks. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Chakaramari on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria.
It is a very quiet and deserted Chakaramari village on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, with carcasses of animals and torched houses reminding visitors of a sad event. Resident Abba Malium says the village of more than 400 people was reduced to ashes by Boko Haram fighters who came from neighboring Nigeria on a late Thursday night.
Ils ont commencé à mettre le feu sur les chambres partout. Nous aussi on a vu par.
He says over 100 Boko Haram fighters attacked their village, shooting indiscriminately and touching all of their houses. He says at least 13 people were either shot to death or slaughtered. many wounded, about 100 men, women and children abducted, and their maize, beans, groundnuts and sheep burned as hundreds of their cattle were taken away. Bashai Hashmi, traditional ruler of Chakamari, says relative peace had returned to their village a year ago after several attacks by the terror group and residents who had fled started to return. He says even though dozens were killed in a series of suicide bombings, residents were determined to collaborate with the military in fighting Boko Haram, but the fresh attack has scared almost everyone.
Population, ils étaient en déplacement. D'autres étaient vers Maroua.
He says because of the attack, people who had started returning home after the military pushed back Boko Haram fighters and installed a base of the multinational joint task force have again fled to places they consider safe in the towns of Mora, Meme Mokolo, and Maroua. He says most of his people have lost everything they struggled to gather when peace returned to their village. Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of the far north region of Cameroon, has called for vigilance. He says after a crisis meeting, troops have been deployed to secure the area and bring back the abducted people whose number and whereabouts, he said, was still being investigated.
Nous appelons les populations à plus de vigilance. Que les comités de vigilance, nous l'avons dit, se remettent résolument au travail.
He says he has asked for the remobilisation and self-defense groups and more vigilance from the population that had been dormant, thinking that Boko Haram had been defeated. He says after a crisis meeting, the multinational joint task force of the Lake Chad Basin that is fighting Boko Haram has been instructed to organize regular patrols and systematic searches of people, vehicles and homes, and suspected villages and towns. This week, Cameroon authorities said they had detained 30 Nigerians who crossed the border Saturday on suspicion of links to Boko Haram Islamist militants. Governor Bakari warned that Boko Haram was looking for opportunities to infiltrate when many people are traveling across the border for religious or national holidays. He said with the Muslim holy month of Ramadan beginning May 5, International Labor Day on May 1, and National Day on May 20, Boko Haram may want to infiltrate and kill people as they gather around mosque and markets. More than 1,500 Cameroonians have been killed in attacks by Boko Haram since the insurgency began 9 years ago. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Chakamari, Northern Cameroon.
Hundreds of Cameroonian women gathered in the capital this week to urge government to stop the killings in the country's Anglophone separatist western regions. Weeks of violent clashes in those areas have left at least 70 people dead. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
About 700 women from Cameroon's northwest and southwest regions sing for peace at the Yaoundé Conference Center. The event Thursday saw women from cultural associations call for efforts to end fighting in the English-speaking regions. Teacher Elizabeth Manka organized the groups. She says most of the women have lost family or belongings in battles between the military and separatists.
The Northwest and the Southwest region are really suffering, and we are here to cry like mothers from the Northwest so that the government should hear our cry and stop this crisis.
Manka says they have received at least 70 women fleeing renewed fighting within the past 2 weeks. Cameroon's Minister of Defense said in a statement that dozens of separatists have been killed within the same period. The Catholic dioceses in the regions said they counted at least 70 bodies, including those of civilians and military members. Manka says all of them were children of Cameroon, dying in what she describes as a senseless war. She says she asked Prime Minister Joseph John Gute to help stop it. At a separate event Thursday, Gute claimed Cameroon's military is winning the fight. He called on the wives and mothers of separatists to convince them to surrender.
I have it on very good information that a lot of those young people out in the bushes are there in spite of themselves. They want to come out, but many don't know how to come out. Talk to them a language of fraternity, that we are begging them to leave the bush because they are our own, they are our children.
Daniel Mukete is a political analyst at the Cameroon Rehabilitation Center for Victims of Conflicts. He says the government cannot declare war, deploy heavily armed troops, and expect separatists to disarm.
Let the enabling conditions for an inclusive dialogue be set. Let violence cease. Let guns stop being heard. Let the people feel free to express their minds.
Mokete says rebel fighters will only believe that troops will not kill them if they withdraw. Liberian peace activist and 2011 Nobel Peace Prize winner Lema Roberta Boye was at another related event in Yaoundé Thursday. She warned Cameroon will descend into chaos if there are no talks to bring peace to the separatist regions.
From my own experience as a Liberian, I think it is important that Cameroonians come to the place where there is a consensus on humanitarian principles. When you hear stories of women using leaves for sanitary pads and people giving birth in the bushes, you know that it's time for leaders to take a step back and say, we need to think about the humanity of our people.
International pressure is growing over the worsening conditions in Cameroon's Anglophone regions. The European Union's top diplomat, Federica Mogherini, on Thursday called for talks between the government and rebels as the only way to achieve a sustainable solution. In a speech at the European Parliament, she said the humanitarian consequences were alarming, with about 500,000 internally displaced people and over 32,000 Cameroon refugees registered in Nigeria. More than 1,500 people have been killed in Cameroon's English-speaking regions since fighting broke out in 2017. The unrest was sparked by English-speaking teachers and lawyers protesting Francophone dominance. Armed rebels took over the movement, demanding independence for an English-speaking state they call Ambazonia. Their demands were met with a government crackdown and calls to surrender or to be killed. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The European Union has launched an observation mission for Malawi's May 25th election, but some political analysts question the impact of foreign election observers, as Lameka Masina reports for VOA from Blantyre.
The European Union is the first to deploy observers for Malawi's May 21 elections on invitation from Malawi's Electoral Commission and Minister of Foreign Affairs. The EU Observer Mission's Deputy Chief, Mark Stevens, spoke at the launch ceremony Thursday in Blantyre.
Our hope is that the elections are transparent, inclusive and credible, and they're run according to the code of conduct for the election and the laws for the election.
The EU's 28 long-term observers arrived in the country in early April. EU observer team member Maketa Nekvindova was deployed to central Malawi's Lilongwe district.
We will have a lot of interviews with a lot of interlocutors, for example, the political parties, some NGOs, the election commissioners, also media, and then we will write our weekly report and send it to our core team, and they will make analysis.
The EU will send a second team of 32 short-term observers just before election day to monitor voting and counting operations. Other foreign observer missions to Malawi's elections include Britain's Commonwealth of Nations and the African Union. Malawian political analyst Sherif Kaisi says the observer missions should be coming earlier.
To have free, fair, credible elections, it's not only during the campaigning period, and it's a process whereby it starts from the registration period up to the time of campaigning period to the day where the elections results are out. So if they come much, much earlier than what they have done now, probably it might have an impact. But for now, I don't think that is going to have an impact on our election.
Gaisi says foreign observers too often serve as a rubber stamp for doubtful African elections.
And the word that comes from the observers does not in many time satisfy the electorates. Because in many time when people are crying to say no elections are not okay, but still, observers, in many times, they side with the winner.
The African Union has faced repeated criticism for recognizing the results of disputed and rigged elections. However, the EU observer mission says their mandate is not to decide if elections should be accepted or not, but to ensure the quality of the process. The EU mission observed Malawi's elections in 2004, 2009, and 2014 when it recommended a biometric voting system after some polling center numbers did not match those registered. The biometric system is being used for the first time in the Malawi's May elections. This year, 7 presidential candidates are expected to contest the country's leadership. The top contenders include President Peter Mutharika, who is seeking his second 5-year term, Vice President Saulos Klaus Chilima, and the main opposition leader, Lazarus Chakwera. Lameck Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
The capital of Somalia, Mogadishu, has far more than a decade struggled against Islamist Al-Shabaab militants. Somali authorities say in March attacks tripled with 15 bombings in just a week's time. Authorities responded with additional checkpoints, improving security, but making work difficult for the city's thousands of tuk-tuk taxi drivers. Reporter Mohamed Sheikh Noor reports from Mogadishu.
20-year-old driver Mohamed Deir checks his tuk-tuk taxi every morning before setting off to work. He is looking for a bomb. Al-Shabaab militants are known for sabotage, and their average monthly attacks in Mogadishu have tripled since March. Somalia's capital has thousands of tuk-tuk drivers, and they are often victims. Mohamed Deir, tuk-tuk driver.
The tuk-tuk drivers have been badly affected by both explosions and roadblocks in Mogadishu. Meanwhile, the government says that it will tighten security, but every time it announces so, security deteriorates. For instance, 6 of my fellow tuk-tuk drivers were killed as a result of explosions that took place in Mogadishu.
The government's inability to provide security is to blame, say critics like Somali lawmaker and former security minister Abdirsaq Umar.
Yes, 15 explosions in 1 week. And the numbers are going up and up. It's not slowing down. And one of the reasons why there's such an escalation is because the government hasn't had a policy or a strategy to counter Al-Shabaab insurgents.
Somali authorities dispute the idea that they are not working hard to secure the capital and defeat Al-Shabaab. To stop the surge in attacks, they increased patrols and set up more checkpoints. Ismail Mukhtar, Mogadishu District Commissioner.
We work both day and night. We want to connect between the police and community in order for them to be able to work together on security issues.
Somali security seized a large store of weapons earlier this month they said was Al-Shabaab's. General Zakiya Hussein, Deputy Police Commissioner.
The seized weapons include explosive belts, ammunition bombs, materials to make homemade explosives, and both heavy and light large weapons.
But Al-Shabaab militants are not the only ones responsible for civilian deaths. At least 5 people were killed in Mogadishu Saturday in violent protests by drivers angry over security forces this month, killing a tuk-tuk driver. While the circumstances of the shooting are unclear, over the last 3 years, security forces have killed more than 20 tuk-tuk drivers. But for drivers like Deq, navigating the threats of Al-Shabaab and rash security is still the best option to earn a living in Somalia. Hamish Shahnoor for VOA News, Mogadishu.
This is VOA and you're listening to Nightline Africa, and coming up in the second half of the program, our Saturday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. And now it's time for a Saturday music spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great music from Africa.
you give me more stamina. If you would feel my soul, come near, sweetie. Why don't you give me more stamina?
Military Tosh.
If you would feel my soul, come to the sweetie.
Ruvarang, mi fati nesia. Rangu switcha Buddha, kusiga wa fara. You don't wanna leave me, baby, do you? Everything I say from my heart, so true.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Stand by me, envision and see a world we built with endless possibility. Daliwami, stand wasami, promise me you never change. Why don't you give me more, stand what?
Would you love me
if
more?
If you would be my soul, come near me.
Suntem ca sare și piperul, ca soarele și luna, colorăm cerul. Suntem ca piperul și sarea, dar mai rar împreună, ca muntele și marea. Noi doi, wasabi oregano, la vita e bella, cum si dice în italian. Nu vreau să ne certăm că-mi dai foca tabasco și nu-mi repare inima nici dacă-mi fac casco. Dar suntem împreună fără niciun stres, condimente pentru o rețetă de succes.
Pasiune, nici pe șapte continente. Am zis ca noi doi, două condimente. Sare și piperul de pe șapte continente. Două condimente, două condimente.
picant. Gen chili sau boia, doar că eu mănânc mai light, fi tu sosul meu de soia. Eu busuioc, tu mentă, relația nu-i perfectă, dar are o tentă. Paprika din India, știi că tu ești unica, gust fiind ca vanilia, una la un milian. O văd și oamenii mei, ci că ăștia doi se potrivesc, nu știm alții ca ei. Dar suntem împreună fără niciun stres, condimente pentru o rețetă de succes.
Noi suntem noi doi, plin de sentimente, plin de pasiune, nici pe șapte continente. Am zis ca noi doi, două condimente, sare și piperul de pe șapte continente. La viață nu te oprești până nu-ți găsești jumătate. Sunt în două continente, sincer, cred că știi și tu. Fac rețete după capul meu, dar nici tu nu spui nu. Și seara sunt acasă, plătite cu Nutella. O arde-n clasic, ca Arșinel și Stella. Am zis ca noi doi, plin de sentimente, plin de pasiune, nici pe șapte continente. Am zis ca noi doi, două condimente, sare și piperul de pe șapte continente. Două condimente, două condimente, de pe șapte continente, șapte continente. Am zis ca noi doi. Am zis ca noi doi.
Ferrari, baby, if you like, we go dance. adia telonge na bina usabwa munyenge inyala sibi lo beni mumusima sidi me ananika enu anyombe na belemo tumimbu mitumbande bate ya moe tude ala betomba si la ne tomba aye ala betomba si la ne tomba we a mama miyomba we mama na
Yeah. kamvisha na pete kwa kumoa kukata vili milimi yawaza ushiwa na kyo na mponda kumbe mwenzangu na mimi ni bure tunajisumbua situko kama 20 mabuzi vingasti wengine anawaonga oh mapenzi ilinifanya kama mtoto nilie vibaya mie siwezi wano nikuto niache niseme jina oh mapenzi ilinifanya kama mtoto nilie vibaya nena mengi iambi ni jambo yo leo nataka kulewa leo minataka kulewa leo nataka kulewa leo zikipanda ni mwage hantila minataka kulewa leo minataka kulewa leo nataka kulewa leo zikipanda ni mwage hantila wenye chingewa kulewa kulewa
فرقت كم مكان عايش جواك احساسك كل يوم يقل وتخطي وخطوتك تزل من كتر ما احبط وبتمل فين تلقى دواك بتودع حلم كل يوم تستفرد بيك الهموم وكلكم والغربة كوم والجرح كبير ما اهلا اهلا سلام سلام بقى طبعك قلة الكلام وما فيش تفسير داري داري يا قلبي مهما تداري قصاد الناس حزننا مكشوف وهو عادي عادي محدش في الدنيا دي بيتعلق بشيء معاك في الصورة غاب وطنك والأهل والصحاب كم واحد ودع وساب من غير أسباب شايف في عينيك نظرة حنين بتحن لمين ولا مين طول عمرها ماشية السنين والناس ركاب مع دقة عقرب الساعات بتموت جوانا ذكريات عشمنا قلوبنا باللي فات ونسينا نعيش كان مكتوب نمشي الطريق ونفارق كل ما ده شيء اتسرق العمر بالبطيء ورسي على ما فيش وداري داري يا قلبي مهما داري قصاد الناس حزننا ما تشوف عادي عادي محدش في الدنيا دي بيتعلق بشي إلا وفراق ويشوف
And that was our Saturday Music Spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. From the rest of the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Salim, producer Saida Hamdun, we thank you for joining us tonight. And join us tomorrow, Sunday. I'm Douglas Impuga.